It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Recently, I met up with the co-authors of a new book called The University of Washington, Antoinette Wills and John Bolser.
And we're very lucky to be here on an October day where the sun is coming down. There's nary a cloud in the sky. It's shining through the trees here on the campus. And I want to start with, why is the campus here? The University of Washington began downtown, and as I understand it, the university still owns a very lucrative plot of land there. How did the university come to move to this location in northeast Seattle?
In 1861, Arthur Denny and Daniel Bagley, pioneers who believed in go-aheaditiveness, got the university located in Seattle. Arthur Denny arranged for the gift of 10 acres of land, and Daniel Bagley managed to put up the building, the original wooden building, before the legislature could change its mind about where the university would be located. And it moved here in 1895 because the city of Seattle was growing, the university was growing, there was not enough room, and the regents wanted not only more ample grounds, but they wanted the students to be safe from the excitements and temptations of city life.
And so they moved out here. And what was here before the university came back in 1895?
As with many areas, it was trees. And the Edmund Meany, who graduated from the university, the territorial university before statehood, he graduated in 1885, was the only graduate of the territorial university in the state legislature. And he introduced the legislation so that the state bought this piece of land, which was literally a wooded wilderness.
We show some pictures in the book of the forest land as it was then. You can see where one of the first activities on campus was clearing the grounds. And for many years after that, they had an activity called Campus Day, which was all the students and faculty and staff got together and did work on the grounds of the university. And so if you look at photographs, you know, well beyond into the 20th century, you see students out cutting trees, clearing paths, and basically improving the grounds of the university, because it was a wilderness when they started.
And as I understand it, we are here on the campus in front of the oldest building on campus. Tell me about it.
This building is from 1895.
It's Denny Hall.
It's Denny Hall, and it is Washington State sandstone. And I look at this building and I see permanence, ambition, visibility. The university closed several times in its early years, and this building said, we are here to stay. We are a real university. And the entire university was contained in this building. The president's office, the library, the laboratories, the classrooms.
Okay, let's jump ahead in time. 1909, the Alaska Yukon Pacific Exposition, which was another leap forward. Let's go over and look at something that remains from that time period. And as we're walking, we might mention that there's a couple of buildings on campus that actually date back to 1909.
Yeah, so as we're walking towards the Red Square, sort of in the center of campus, we're walking away from Denny. Off to our right is Cunningham Hall, which was the women's building in the Alaska-Yukon Exposition. And actually just a bit south of that is the architecture building, which was the other major structure that survives from that exposition. Many of the structures were temporary and were used on campus for many years, but they eventually started to deteriorate and were taken down.
Why did they decide to put the Alaska-Yukon Pacific Exposition here at the University of Washington campus?
Well, once again, Edmund Meany had a role in that. He was on the faculty. He was a professor of history and forestry. He was a journalist. He was a publicist. He was a promoter. He was one of the most energetic people. And there was a civic group that wanted to have the exposition, and Edmund Meany was the liaison. The reason to put it here, land was available, the state was willing to support it, and there was infrastructure. There was transportation from downtown Seattle, such as it was, to the university campus.
And what was the transportation back then in 1909?
Streetcar lines.
Wow, a rail link from downtown to the university district. What an idea.
And where the statue of George Washington is now, that statue, Edmund Meany, and the Daughters of the American Revolution, they raised the money, and Edmund Meany commissioned American sculptor Laredo Taft to make that heroic statue specifically for the University of Washington campus. And it stands about where the main entrance was to that fair.
You know, when I look around the campus, I see so many different styles of architecture from building to building, but I'm not an expert in architecture. Is this just me, or is there kind of a pastiche of different styles here on campus?
That is definitely true. The basis of the campus was really pushed by Henry Suslow and his architect of choice, Carl Gould. And they pushed the collegiate Gothic style that we see along sort of the earlier part of campus, so the Arts Quad and the Science Quad. And then, you know, here we sit in Red Square right now. We had buildings that were built in the 60s and 70s, and we have a much more modernist take on the campus. The square we're in right now is a red brick plaza, but it was originally a grassy quad with paths and other things. But when they built the parking garage underneath it, they had to do something with it. And they couldn't leave it as a grassy quad, so they we now have this lovely red brick square in front of Suslow Library, where we're coming to.
And when I give my campus walking tours, I tell people that Red Square is like a microcosm of the main growth periods of the university, as reflected in the architecture. Suslow Library is from 1926, and it is the finest example of collegiate Gothic on campus for the growth spurt after World War I. The administration building, now Gerwinning Hall, was built after World War II when there was a surge of students, especially the returning veterans. And Kane Hall behind us and Odegaard Library were built in the style of the 1970s to accommodate the baby boom.
Now, from where we stand in Red Square, I can look and see in the distance, in the misty distance, we can see Mount Rainier, and just below that, many trees, and just below that, the Drumheller Fountain. And this is a direct connection from the university back to 1909, is it not?
Yeah, so the orientation of the campus is really a legacy of that fair. The firm that did the design, the Olmsted Brothers, had been to campus prior to the fair and came up with a plan that actually oriented the campus so that its axis was looking out over Lake Washington. It was completely different direction from the way it is now. But for the 1909 fair, we see that the whole campus was reoriented and pointed at the mountain with a big fountain basin overlooking the mountain. And I always think it's a great sort of mental exercise to look at why that might be the case. And we can see on a beautiful, clear, sunny day today, we can just barely see the mountain today. And you can imagine the original landscape architects coming to campus on, say, a gray, drizzly day, and there being no hint of the mountain whatsoever, but the lake was clearly there, and so that would be the obvious visual target for them. And then I can just picture them coming to do the fair design, and all of a sudden there's this giant mountain that wasn't there before. The shock must have been immense. So,
and Antoinette, you were telling me earlier that we're right in front of your favorite place on campus. Is that right?
The Suslow Reading Room. It is such a grand reading room. It is the favorite place of many people. And the students now call it the Harry Potter Room.
Because it looks like it could be in a Harry Potter movie.
Absolutely.
There's a great story about Suslow. It was basically his downfall as president of the university. He was in many arguments with the governor of the time over expenditure of money. And the library itself was considered Suslow's extravagance by the governor, and that brought his termination. The governor restacked the Board of Regents and got him fired, and now it's considered the jewel of campus. So it's interesting how history will turn like that sometimes.
Ha! You got the last word. So we're across from Gerberding Hall, which was for many years known as the administration building. And in the 1960s, it was the location of, we associate the campus with study and with quiet contemplation, but it was quite the opposite back in the 1960s because of the turmoil of the times, because of a specific incident which took place there. What was that incident?
Current students cannot imagine the level of violence that was going on during the Vietnam protests and all of the other issues that were roiling campuses at the end of the 1960s and the beginning of the 1970s. On a Sunday morning in June at 3:30 in the morning, dynamite was placed in front of the doors of the administration building. And this enormous bomb went off, and it shattered windows, and it shattered the concrete floor. No one took responsibility. No one was ever arrested. No group issued a manifesto. It is one of the unsolved mysteries of the university's history.
Was anyone injured?
No one was injured because at least the bomber chose Sunday morning at 3:30 a.m. when there was only one person in the building, a custodial supervisor.
Antoinette and John, as people who intimately know this campus, what are the best-kept secrets about the campus that someone would come here and not even notice unless they were specifically directed to it? Is there something that you take particular delight in showing folks that they might not or observe, even if they went to school here for 4 years?
I like to show them the Grieg Garden, which is between the Allen Library and Thompson Hall. And it is a space that is surrounded by trees. And so you have to know that it is there. And you go into it, and it is this lovely, quiet space with a statue of Edvard Grieg, the Norwegian composer. That's how it gets its name. And once again, Edmund Meany makes his appearance in the university's history. He thought that the university should be an arboretum with lots of different kinds of trees. And so you will notice in the Grieg Garden that some of the trees are older and larger than others. For the bicentennial of the birth of George Washington, he organized the foreign consuls in Seattle to plant a tree from their country in the Consul's Grove, which part of it is the Grieg Garden and part of it was on the Hub Lawn.
Okay, I want to talk about my favorite hidden treasure. We're here in the Liberal Arts Quad, where KUOW used to be. I used to walk through this quad quite a bit, and one day I happened to look up, and I noticed that up on all of the buildings are these amazing, what I thought were gargoyles, but Antoinette, you've corrected me. You've told me that these are statues, and when you look up all around the buildings, there are featured heads and features, but if you don't know what's going on, it's a bit of a mystery as to what all these statues are about. Where do they come from? What's the idea here?
They're sculptures, and they were included in the original plans that Carl Gould drew up for these buildings, because, of course, having decorative sculptures and statues was part of the Gothic tradition. My favorites, Rate Hall was the first building built, and it was for home economics, so there are statues of women, sculptures of women doing domestic things. And then Savory Hall, which was originally philosophy, has sports figures. I'm not sure why, but I got my PhD in Smith Hall in the history department, and at the corner of Smith Hall that is closest to Miller Hall, there are four figures, and if you look up at those, you see what looks like a professor with books, and you see a soldier in a World War I helmet and gas mask. And those figures are supposed to represent the four major civilizations of the world. The professor is the intelligent democracies of the Americas, and the man in the gas mask is Europe, because that building is from the 1930s. It's World War I had happened, but World War II had not.
Now, when I look at these statues, the styles, at least to me, look wildly different. I mean, but they're on each building. How do they come to be, and how do they come to look so different? Do we know?
Well, I think to me the wonderful thing about them is that the statues, or the grotesques, as we sometimes call them, were actually sculpted by university art faculty.
I like to tell people that they walk by pieces of the university's history every day and don't even know it's there. From Denny Hall, as you walk towards the quad, you pass some concrete benches. And they actually have dates on them. Some are hard to read. One of them is the class of 1885 with my favorite person, Edmund Meany.
Antoinette Wills and John Bolser, they're the co-authors of a new book called The University of Washington. I'm Ross Reynolds. It's The Record on KUOW.